Welcome to Talking Stock. I'm your host, Doug Harvey, Director of the Institute for Faculty Development at Stockton University. Talking Stock is a space where colleagues can discuss teaching, scholarship, and service. On today's episode, we're joined by two colleagues to talk about cross-cultural communication.
I'm Ami Shah. I'm Associate Professor here at Stockton University, and I'm also the Director of a research lab called Cross-Cultural Speech, Language, and Acoustics Lab.
Lois Spitzer, I'm Associate Professor of Education, and I work specifically to prepare K-12 teachers to work with English learners and children from different backgrounds.
Great. Ami and Lois, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming. Let's just start with a question about what the definition, the straightforward definition of cross-cultural communication is in your minds. You know, when somebody else asks you how do you answer them?
I would define cross-cultural communication as the study of how people from different cultural and linguistic backgrounds communicate among themselves and across cultures. Ami?
Mm-hmm. Just building off of that, I would break it down into specific demographics. So on campus, for example, students from one culture, how they interact with faculty from a different culture, or students with each other, and then culture can be anything, pretty much. You know, it could be the country you come from or the language that you speak, or it could also be North Jersey, South Jersey differences. Mm-hmm. And it could also be, you know, the orientation, you know, gender, sexual orientation, all of that. That all has certain connotations, and that comes across in the communication style, dialects, accents, all of that. And that can then create either connections or sometimes a breakdown in that communication. That is really what we talk about.
In the academic area, I see cross-cultural communication as the way to teach people about effective communication, right? Mm-hmm. By raising cultural awareness, mm-hmm. and also getting a different perspective of how other people see the world.
Yes.
Okay. And why do you see that? What's the negative impact then of not having a better understanding of cross-cultural communication in higher ed? I mean, what would faculty see in their classes or in their own teaching that would give you reason to think that we need to address this?
Well, cross-cultural communication, you know, our world is becoming so diverse, our college campuses are becoming so diverse that we have people from all different cultures, all different language backgrounds, and if a faculty member does not understand the background of the student or understand the perspective from which the student is coming, it's very difficult to reach that student and to, you know, to impress upon that student the connectivity of the discipline or whatever they're teaching and the global environment.
Yeah, and I think faculty do a pretty good job in becoming more globally aware, and you know, they're often through their training and the years spent, that happens to some extent. But for students, this is something that we would really need to intentionally teach and make them be aware of, first of all, where the cross-cultural communication barriers are impacting their school performance, their interactions with each other, how well they fit on campus, how included they feel in different activities, and their sort of ownership of everything. So for me, it's been more about really helping students understand the differences between each other, and also the differences, and be able to relate to the faculty's cultural and linguistic differences. I'll talk more about that in a few.
Yeah, what are some of the? Can you give me some examples of things that you've heard of or seen that go on that are examples of the lack of cross-cultural communication impacting students or faculty?
Yeah, so just a quick list of that. So, for example, for faculty, the downside would be where if they cannot relate to their students in a way that really grabs the student's interest and connects to them at their cultural level, that's going to affect their student evaluations of their teaching, ultimately going to affect their tenure and promotion. At the same time, it's also how well the faculty feels included in the climate of that university. For the students, of course, it's all about their success in their classroom. And then research has shown that the cognitive load makes a difference. So if you have difficult topics, say statistics, for example, that in itself is challenging. On top of that, if you have to deal with cultural differences or linguistic differences in the way the faculty is approaching that, that can add barriers to the students mm-hmm. initially. And, you know, so that those are some.
And in cultures such as the culture of our university, Stockton, we live in a very secluded environment that in itself is not very multicultural or multilingual. Right. So as faculty, we need to bring that multicultural awareness into our classroom. And we see it, I mean, when we have students who have international teachers, and if that teacher happens to have a foreign accent or has a different style of teaching that is not from, you know, mm-hmm. something they've experienced before, there's a, you know, the students really tend to either voice their dissatisfaction mm-hmm. or complain. Yeah. And I think it behooves...
Or withdraw.
Right. Yeah. It behooves us to help them prepare mm-hmm. for these kinds of differences, even if this is their first experience yeah. with working with people from other cultures, so that when they go into the work world, you know, they're not going to throw up their hands and say, I can't understand my employer because mm-hmm. he has an accent.
Right.
Yeah. In certain yeah. professions, it becomes very incumbent. Like, I come from health science, so, you know, the students are going to be largely facing populations, not only of patients, but fellow healthcare workers from a variety of different cultures and languages and regions even. And like, knowing the issues that can come up with this and addressing that becomes really critical.
In the field of education, it's mm-hmm. especially important because our K-12 population is becoming increasingly non-native English speaking.
Right.
And so we really need to help prepare our pre-service teachers to work with children from culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds in order to help these children succeed in yeah. school.
So how do we train then faculty and students? What are some of the strategies that we can use to help them become better at communicating?
So there are certain programs that I have, you know, been working on for a number of years that came from my research, but then they're part of the pedagogical work. So for faculty, for example, I am helping faculty who are not from the area or who are from a different country and who have a strong cultural and linguistic difference that can show up as an accent. And there are a real problems, and then there are some non-real problems, psychosocial problems. The real problem is sometimes if the accent is that different from a student's repertoire, then it can really impede understanding of the material. You know, it could just be the flow, how fast they're talking, or the pronunciation of certain mm-hmm. intonation, the pronunciation of certain sounds, and that can really create that barrier in the classroom, and then students can just pull out and check out. So I work on faculty to identify if their accent is truly getting in the way of their delivery of instruction, or any other nonverbal matter. Communication differences, for that matter, that are creating that gap. And if they are, then to work, you know, help them, direct them to the resources such as accent management, communication enhancement, even aware, being able to read the listeners' cues in class, you know, and then connecting with listeners in a variety of different ways. So through humor, through pragmatics, things like that. So I work on some of that. And then when it's not a real issue, such as what we call psychosocial, you know, with biases and stereotypes, as in somebody's racially different and the listeners bring their own set of values in prejudging that person. So in that case, then it becomes more of an onus to educate the listeners in a non-threatening way so they can become more intrigued and interested in the culture of the speaker and recognize that their stereotypes that they brought don't work. Basically, we would systematically, break down those stereotypes.
Okay. One way of doing this is by internationalizing our curriculum mm-hmm. and helping teachers understand how to bring more global perspectives into whatever their discipline is. And that's fairly easily done by accessing you know, newspapers or media that's produced in other countries, or having students intentionally take other perspectives when researching projects, having speakers come into the class, whether it be other faculty members or outside speakers, to talk about issues that go beyond the walls of our university. We also have a global lecture series here at Stockton, and what we do is we usually invite our own faculty members to come and talk about issues that are related to their disciplines, but also many of them are international, so they connect them very naturally to their own cultural backgrounds. And these are just really great forums for students to hear other voices from other perspectives, other parts of the world.
So what I'm hearing is that there's two pieces to this. There's the awareness side, and then there's the actual skill side. So how do you find a way to marry those two?
One thing I, one thing is addressing it both ways, the from the listener and speaker. I already mentioned the faculty's perspective, but also having faculty train their students. That's a program that we're working on right now. Also, a number of classes have piloted that, where the students are being trained to listen to a variety of different accents. And there's accent sensitivization, accent appreciation, and accent awareness. And what's happening as they are increasing their awareness and their ability to recognize all these different accents, the brain is adapting to these different patterns of speech. And then the side benefit of that is their curiosity is invoked. They get intrigued. They start to appreciate the differences, and they start to see the human side of this communication, rather than previously they might have just thought this is going to be a challenging communication, and they might have withdrawn a lot sooner. So this gives them, gets them in the door for about 8 weeks, and they are building new wiring in the brain. So that's another thing.
Also, awareness is my big issue, but also having students understand that there are, even within our own culture and country, there are regional varieties of English. Yeah. Besides there being world Englishes and other accents, even within our own faculty, we have people from other parts of the country. And so raising awareness with our students as to what other accents sound like, and again, the biases they bring, even about regional dialects within their own language, is important. In one of my classes, we actually talk about regional varieties of English. We talk about standard versus non-standard English and the stigmas attached with the non-standard varieties. So there's a whole social, sciences aspect to it, too.
That reminded me of a great, I'm glad you mentioned that, because out of this kind of experience, as students start to recognize their own, what they're bringing to the table, they recognize that they have an accent.
Yes.
They never thought of it from a listener's perspective that, that there is a challenge to the listener in understanding,
me.
Exactly. And so that kind of shifts that burden of, expectation that the speaker should always be working on this, or, sometimes misattributing that, saying that, you should learn English, when the person already knows English, they may have a discernible accent because, past 15 years of age, you can't really change your speech patterns too much. So that's something they become more sympathetic to. They become more aware of how the brain works, how bilingual experience really happens, and how they are, also part of this whole sort of complex, sure. network.
One last way I can think of that I would like to suggest that we encourage students to study abroad and to do study tours. We also have on our campus an intensive English program which attracts international students to our campus. So, having an experience where you leave the place where you're comfortable and you go someplace else, especially if it's another country with a different culture, it's such a valuable experience. And at Stockton, we're working on growing those kinds of experiences and partnerships with other institutions across the world.
So you're saying that students will someday understand my Philadelphia accent.
I don't know about that. Well, about my New York accent.
I think the best case we can expect, and I would love that this happens, if they actually notice you have a Philadelphia accent.
Right.
They start to ask you more questions about Philadelphia.
If they take my class, my intro to linguistics class, they'll know Doug has an accent.
Right. And that they actually start to get more interested in the culture of Philadelphia and travel outside of South Jersey.
That's the hope.
You know? Right.
Good. We've come to the end of our time. I have a section I'd like to call Stock Tips, where we share resources that might be of value to people to learn more about the topic. So are there any websites or books or other places that people could go if they want to learn more about cross-cultural communication?
Well, something very easy to do would be a suggestion to everyone who's listening to make intentional conversations with international faculty members right on your own campus, because there are many, many people on everybody's campus, scholars from other parts of the world. There are multicultural student groups all over campus, and those functions usually are wonderful, full of food and music, and that's a great place to learn about other cultures, attending lectures, global lectures.
So I'm going to hit at it more directly. So if we want to build skills and you know, become aware that the communication can be enhanced in a faster, strategic way. So if people want to work on, say, even identifying if the accent is getting in the way of the communication, then as a resource, you know, if they want to get their accent screened or assessed to see all aspects of communication, they can definitely contact us here through IFD. There are also more of the accent listening programs and software available. They can contact us for that. And these are all sort of new in the field. So we, you know, the copyright protector, we can't just give them out for intellectual property purposes, but they can certainly contact us and we can help, individually people put these programs together. We're putting curriculum together, packages for each field to see cognitive and affective goals for any discipline, any course that anybody is teaching, but the cultural aspect of the globalization aspect of their curriculum, if they want to work on that, what would a cognitive and affective goal look like? And then how do you systematically put a package together that would assess the student's baseline cultural competence, build certain skills, include reflections, and then retest it at the end. So we have packages for that as well. I'm happy to work with anybody who wants more training on that.
We've actually given survey out to some of our education students, and we have surveyed them about their cultural competence at the beginning of their teaching practicum, and we're going to retest them 2 years later to see if our courses have had any positive effect or our college campus. So there is a way, it's important to measure to see if what you're doing is really having any effect. One more plug. I think that, studying world languages is a big thing. Our world language programs need to become better, more numerous. We need to be able to have access to, college courses in other languages. And so it does behoove us to expand our world language programs also.
Some of these things are also work in progress. We would love to get input from people, such as we're surveying international faculty on campus. Dr. Spitzer is doing that. I'm surveying international students and also local students to see their experiences with international, with some of these global challenges in the classroom and on campus. So we would love to hear, if there are stories or feedback people want to share with us. And at the same time, the last thing I'll say is there is no way to quantitatively measure. There has been no way to quantitatively measure your baseline cultural competence. But now we actually have a survey tool that can do that. Okay. So if anybody wants to incorporate that in their class, they're welcome to do that.
How do people get a hold of either of you if online? Can they email you?
Welcome to email me. Our emails are our first and last names with a dot in between them at stockton.edu.
So you are?
Lois.Spitzer@stockton.edu. And I'm also available through the School of Education. So
Yeah, and I'm ami.shah, that's A-M-E-E dot S-H-A-H at stockton.edu.
Well, thanks to both of you for coming today and having having this chance to discuss cross-cultural communication with you. Thanks. Talking Stock is a podcast produced by me, Doug Harvey, for the Institute for Faculty Development at Stockton University. Visit our website, www.stockton.edu/IFD, where you can find a link to show notes and transcripts for every episode. The music for Talking Stock is provided by the Organic Music Library, www.organicmusiclibrary.com. Thank you for listening.